Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of All Things Trek that has nothing to do with Star Trek at all. Today, I am joined by my good friend Graham. Yeah, he's been on the show a couple of times before. You may remember him as the voice of Gulp Dar. And then I am joined by my dearest Lillian.
Hello.
Lillian has not been on the show before, but she did provide the voice for Ellen in the last episode that I did of Tales from the DMZ. And so today, on this special episode, we are going to be talking about Doctor Who, and particularly the new Stephen Moffat Doctor Who. I put "new" in quotation marks since some of it is 2 years old. But specifically series 5 and 6. I haven't seen any of series 7. I don't know if it's actually
series 7 is not out yet.
Not out yet.
Okay. It will begin on August 15th. Previously, I would have had high hopes because they're starting with another Dalek episode. Possibly due to things that you realized upon watching Series 6, but having seen Series 6, I no longer hold out hope that that will be super good.
All right, so before we get into Series 5 and 6, I want each of you guys' opinion on what have you thought of the new Doctor Who, like, up until this point?
Should we start, or should I?
Go ahead, Graham.
I thought that the new Doctor Who, Series 1 through 4... It was a really enjoyable, I want to say romp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it kind of got stale near the end, especially in the end of series 4, but that was not because of the actors so much as it was sort of Russell Davies, the previous creative director before Stephen Moffat.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, you know, he was very good at some things in plots, but he did them over and over again.
Yes.
And by the time that they'd happened about the fourth time in a row, you were starting to go, okay, maybe it's time for Mr. Davies to move on.
Lillian?
All right, my opinion on the new Doctor Who is that I'm kind of addicted to the ambiance of it. Like, there's something about the art direction that is very beautiful and haunting, but the writing, it's like so consistently at the end of each season, they write themselves into a terrible corner where it explodes into plots that make no sense and go way too much in the, like, I'd say that this entire show is basically fan service in a lot of senses, where it's like, can we love the Doctor enough? And I do love the Doctor, but not so much that I need you to talk about it all the time.
Oh yeah, and for anyone who is listening at home, Lillian's house is full of parrots, so you will probably hear them occasionally chiming in. They have things to say.
Dogs and cats too.
I'm a parrot.
And Dave.
Yes,
and also a Dave.
So I want to, and I've already told Lillian this, so she's gonna have to bear with me. But I want to tell the listeners a story, because this happened about 2 or 3 years ago when I was a younger and slightly less grumpy Orin. I was watching.
Sure you were.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah. No, I promise. I was watching season 4 of Doctor Who. With ye old David Tennant, and I was enjoying it, and I suddenly got to this episode called Silence in the Library. And I was like, this is the best episode of Doctor Who I have ever seen. Who wrote this?
It was really good.
And I found out it was this guy named Stephen Moffat. And I was like, what else has Stephen Moffat done? And I saw that he was also the one who wrote Blink and The Girl in the Fireplace, which are both awesome episodes of Doctor Who.
He also did The Empty Child.
Which one is that?
That's the one with the girl with the gas mask.
Wait, that was him too?
That was him too.
Are you sure?
Yes. I checked this out and I was amazed. Because of all these creative contributions that were done before Series 5 and 6, he had such credentials.
Okay.
He had so many
and then
credentials.
I found out he also did a sitcom called Coupling that I really enjoyed. And he was also doing, by the time I got around to watching season 5 and 6 of Doctor Who, he was also doing Sherlock. And at this point, I was pretty much convinced that Stephen Moffat could do no wrong. And I was like, it would be really awesome if he was in charge of Doctor Who. And then he was in charge of Doctor Who, and I was like, this is going to be great!
Everyone hailed the new era.
And then it actually happened, and I was like, that's not what I wanted at all.
I know. That was kind of exactly how it was for me.
It's like, not what I expected. Because, and like, I was ready for a new take on the Doctor, because I honestly hated the way that David Tennant went out. I thought that, the end of time, in my opinion, was unmitigated garbage.
Yeah, the end of time, I love David Tennant, I love him as much as it is possible for a man who is at least 99% heterosexual to love another man, and I probably wouldn't kick him out of my bed, but the end of time was unmitigated bullshit. And I like to pretend, this is my headcanon, which we will try to never use that phrase in the show again.
Yeah.
That Journey's End, he did not, in fact, just regenerate his hand into another doctor. That was him holding back his regeneration energy. And then how Journey's End really ended was with him regenerating into the 11th Doctor. Just cut out the whole end of time, like, sequence.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about with fan service, is that it's like we can't really do anything mean to the Doctor. Like, we have to give Rose her boyfriend. We have to make sure he doesn't die. Everything has to always go his way, and that really bugs me.
Yeah, and so we started with season 5, and we have this new Doctor, and he's kind of funny looking. But I was willing to get into that. I was like, all right, the Doctor has been getting more or less consistently younger with each regeneration, which kind of is kind of neat. It kind of gives you a whole Merlin feel to it. And then he runs into this girl, Amy Pond, and she seemed really cool. And I was like, this is awesome. She's going to be the next companion. I didn't know how I felt about the next companion being a little girl, but I was like, maybe they'll make this work. And then they were like, and then he leaves for, you know, like 12, however many years. And he comes back and she's like all grown up. And I was like, okay.
He had to leave so that she could become sexy, Oren. Like, you can't bring a little girl around when she doesn't wear miniskirts and pretends to be a cop with handcuffs. You can't.
Yeah, apparently.
You also apparently can't have a Doctor Who series where she doesn't try to kiss the Doctor at least once.
Yeah, okay, that was like my immediate, like, when I the first sign that I wasn't really loving this new Doctor Who series was Amy Pond, because it's like, I don't understand Amy Pond. Like, she's incredibly entitled, which bothers me a little bit. I was actually able to buy it with Donna Noble for whatever reason. Donna Noble, a lot of people thought Donna Noble was really annoying. I really liked
her. They did?
Yeah, a lot of people.
Who are these people? I want to punch them. Donna Noble was the best companion.
Yeah, I really liked Donna Noble.
It was really rad. It was wonderful to have a companion that wasn't trying constantly to get into the Doctor's pants.
Exactly. And I thought
I
loved
Donna Noble. She was my favorite.
It was funny that Donna Noble's, like, that was, like, her not wanting to sleep with the Doctor was, like, her shtick. That was, like, the thing that she did. It was a big enough deal that it was, like, a character trait for her.
Loved Martha, but Donna Noble not wanting to sleep with the Doctor was such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, like, I wanted to like Martha. I couldn't, though, because she fell in love with the Doctor so fast. And then, like, it gets even weirder because, like, Amy falls in love with the Doctor, but she's technically, she has this little problem of she's already technically engaged.
And then technically married.
And she becomes technically married, but she's still in love with the Doctor.
Yeah, that was the thing that really drove me nuts about season 5, was that they kept, like, they were trying to play this romantic tension between, of Amy being like, who do I choose, the Doctor or Rory, my fiancé, / husband, and I just didn't buy that she would even consider Rory. She doesn't even seem to like him, let alone love him.
This is where I will bring up that I used to be really down on Keiko O'Brien in Deep Space Nine, Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
We will actually have Star Trek discussion on this show, Oren. Oh my God.
Oh, goodness.
You guys are cheating.
I know. I'm cheating. But I used to be really down on Keiko O'Brien, and I would call her, you know, the horrible vampire, blah, blah, blah. That was like 80% jokes time. And it was mostly because Keiko O'Brien's actor would portray Keiko's really arch and kind of harsh. But she was trying to portray her, I think, as, you know, a loving wife, just, you know, in the later stages of marriage. When I say that Amy Pond strikes me as a person who is emotionally abusive, I'm not joking at all. That's how she acts.
Yeah, and I mean, in season 6, we saw in the episode that everyone loves, Let's Kill Hitler, she is legitimately emotionally abusive. There's not even a question. Yeah. She bullies Rory about his sexuality.
Yeah.
When she's like, you're gay, Rory, and Rory's like, I'm not gay. And she's like, no, you're gay. You don't like girls. And it's like,
yep.
That you could get sued for that. Like,
hey,
that's...
Guys, At this point, I'd like to bring up something that I noticed, because I couldn't remember The Girl Who Waited, so I rewatched it today.
Oh, yeah?
A thing struck me about watching The Girl Who Waited, because Rory, at this point, has already waited...
Speaking of abuse.
Yeah, 2,000 years. Of not just, you know, waiting for her, but guarding her, trudging her around, possibly killing people to protect her. And then... Yep. Even in the doctor's wife, he waits hypothetically about 50 years, but possibly another 2,000. Like, he's not really clear on how long he's waited. And then we get to the girl who waited. She waits 36 years and is so indignant and angry.
Even though she knows to the day when they'll show up.
See, that's the thing that pisses me off, is that she's never... Like, that does show that she loves Rory in the end. They always try to bring it back to that. But it's Rory's love and sweetness and greatness to her that just makes me want her out of the series. Like, I can't watch her do this to Rory over and over again, where she never takes responsibility and never is thankful enough.
I never bought, like, they try to sell us in Series 6 a lot of times that, oh no, she totally means Rory when she's having these emotional moments. It's all... She actually loves Rory. I can't buy that because, in The Day of the Moon, you see Rory just have this emotional breakdown when he realizes his wife is in the clutches of the Silence.
Yeah.
And for all he knows, she's being tortured. And the doctor, like, tries to make this half-hearted attempt at comforting him. And you remember again that this guy waited 2,000 years for this fucking person to come out of the Pandorica. 2,000 goddamn years. And you hear her on the other side of the little nano recorder blubbering, and it is absolutely, positively clear she's talking about the doctor. She uses terms like fell out of the sky. You don't use that with like, nurse dude. She's talking about the fucking doctor. She's in love with the doctor. And then at the end of the episode, she tries to play it off as, well, I said stupid face, so that meant you.
Yeah, like...
The doctor's stupid face how many fucking times? No, she's cheating on Rory emotionally, if not physically. Like, right in front of him.
Well, she tried to cheat on him physically, but
the doctor has a moral compass.
Sometimes.
What I want to know is why the doctor never said, like, later on the season, no, I never slept with Amy. Like, half the drama from, like, the latter half of the season would have been dropped had the doctor just once said, no, I didn't sleep with Amy. That didn't happen.
Well, because, see, it's that they want us to believe that there's this emotional conflict between Amy and Rory, but at the end of the day, they still love each other. But I don't believe it. They're telling me that they don't believe it.
Yeah.
They're telling me that she loves him. But from the way they act, I can tell that's not true. And at best, she keeps him around because she derives some kind of perverse pleasure from yanking his chain.
Well, I think it's because she actually is an emotional abuser. And she can't get rid of her abuse target because then she'd have to abuse the doctor. And that wouldn't be any good.
Yeah, the doctor wouldn't stand for that sort of stuff.
Like, that's the thing that's kind of weird, though. Like, what Dave was saying is that the doctor lets her beat up Rory in that way, where it's like, oh, did we sleep together? Maybe the baby's his. And just, like...
Well, that's a new thing.
Like, the doctor would stand up and not let her, you know, even in the flirtatious ways, be cruel to Rory in that way. Or at least kick them off. He could kick them out.
Well, he does. In fairness, he does eventually. But I know what you mean. Not at the time when it would matter. Although here, if we're talking about the new doctor, this is the thing about the new doctor that I don't like. There's a couple of things, and I understand that the new doctor is a different doctor. He's not the same doctor as before. But I am really sick and tired of this. The doctor lies bullshit. I am so tired of it. They're like this. The doctor's like he seems to derive pleasure off of like not telling people things they really need to know. Go ahead, Greg.
I think we should just segue right here into how the 11th Doctor, I think, I really wanted to like him, and I don't think this is Matt Smith's performance necessarily. I like Matt Smith as an actor.
Yeah, I was about to say, I really pity Matt Smith because I could tell he's a dude who wanted to play the Doctor for so long, and then he gets stuck with seasons 5 and 6.
Yeah, it's just to segue into how the 11th Doctor is written, he's written as a Doctor that has completely lost his moral compass.
Yeah.
Like, this is a Doctor who previously, and... People make a big stink about how in earlier seasons of Doctor Who, the Doctor was more brutal and, like, used guns and bloop, bloop, bloop. I don't know that I buy that he's as bad as the 11th Doctor. But the 10th Doctor and the 9th Doctor before him established themselves as guys with very good moral compasses, and especially about things like genocide.
yeah, the ninth Doctor was about redemption, and the tenth Doctor was about regaining his humanity, and the 11th Doctor is about lying to everybody.
The 11th Doctor is apparently about losing both those things because they don't fucking matter anymore.
Yeah, the fact, like, in the silence, the episode, like, where the Doctor just straight up is like, you know, these guys, these dudes. Is that Day of the Moon?
Yeah, that's Day of the Moon when he tricks humanity into genociding the Silence throughout their history and is gleeful about it.
Yeah, it's not even like...
He's doing a little
and
dance.
And if you think about it, it's like, the Silence, what have they actually done? They have been manipulating the course of human events, and we saw them kill one person.
We saw a Doctor kill Amy twice in the series.
It's true.
Yeah, I mean, like, compare that to, you know, I don't know, the Daleks, where the Doctor has constantly tried to give them, you know, every chance he can to surrender and leave.
Again, the 10th Doctor did.
Yeah.
There was the, also Victory of the Daleks, where their big victory was... They got to live, and I thought it was pretty clear in Victory of the Daleks, when the Doctor talked to the Daleks and when he was talking about what he was going to do, that if they had not pulled their trump card at the last minute, he would have killed the last remnant of the Dalek race, and he would have grinned about it.
Yeah, maybe.
And all I could do was flashback to the Doctor's daughter, where he has the chance to murder that dude who killed his daughter in front of him, and he says, "I never would." Like, there's so many times in series 5 and 6 when I flash back to that episode and I'm like, what happened?
Something bad. Yeah, and then there's like the I don't remember what episode this is in, but there's the it's where they're looking for Amy, and they like Rory goes on to like the Cybermen fleet and they start like blowing it yeah. up, and it's like, why are you doing that?
Cybermen goes to war.
Yeah, a good man goes, it's like, why are you doing that? What do you think blowing up the Cybermen fleet is going to accomplish?
I read, apparently they were doing that just to show the Silence how serious they were. Because when you want to show the Silence who you're really mad at, how serious you are, you kill a bunch of Cybermen for no reason.
Yeah, that scene bothered me more than I could describe. I was just like, what are you doing? They don't know where Amy is. Like, even if they did, I don't think this is something the Doctor would do. I mean, at this point, I don't understand why the Doctor isn't carrying around, like, a giant assault rifle. Because that was one of the things, when I first started watching Doctor Who, I kept asking, why doesn't the Doctor carry some kind of laser gun? Because he's always getting into problems where he could use a laser gun, they'd be really useful, and but he doesn't carry one.
Found a sonic screwdriver, and everyone knows that is the most useful of weapons.
Yeah. It's not a gun, and that's... It's very upsetting. I'm sure we've talked about this over and over again. It's like, the Doctor is supposed to be someone who fixes things, who, like, basically stops apocalypses from happening by bluffing and talking to people and bringing them to their right senses.
The Doctor's supposed to be a charisma hero.
And instead, we just keep on seeing him hurting people, which is very upsetting.
Yeah, and like I said... Like, I finally accepted that the reason the Doctor doesn't carry a gun is because to him, violence is always a last resort. And he doesn't ever want to be prepared for violence, because in his mind, that's inviting it. I don't understand why this new Doctor doesn't carry a gun. Really, all he's doing is making it harder for him to kill people, which he doesn't seem to have a huge problem with.
Episode.
Guns aren't guns.
I'm just saying, he was one step away from holsters.
Yeah, I mean, like, the frickin'... And of course, the sonic screwdriver... God, this is like, in the very early Doctor Who, like the first Doctor, they apparently actually forced the writers to break the sonic screwdriver because they were tired of it being used so much to get out of every problem. They need to do that again.
Yeah.
I am so tired of the sonic screwdriver.
Because Amy can apparently build one out of scraps.
Oh, Jesus,
well,
yeah.
No, that, I'm okay with that. That took 36 years. I'll accept that she could do it in 36 years. No,
but humans can't do it yet, and most other aliens can't. I mean, if the sonic screwdriver is as useful as it is, why don't we see it in other races' hands?
No, you want to talk about the Amy-related sonic screwdriver moment that really pissed me off? It was the part in the first time when they encounter those the time cops who go around in a big human-sized ship.
Oh, God, the Tesselecta.
Yeah, the Tesselecta.
Except they're not cops. They're just dudes who decided to go back in time and torture bad people.
Okay, right. But no, okay, so Amy has the sonic screwdriver.
Cops.
And she's like, all right, it has mental commands. I want it to turn... That's how she describes it. It's like it has a psychic interface.
I think I blocked this part out.
And it's like she uses it to turn off the Tesselecta's security clearances so their death robots will start attacking them. But she doesn't have any idea how those systems work or how the sonic screwdriver works. So it's basically just, it just does whatever she wants. It's
I
not
should have
like,
rewatched Let's Kill Hitler, and then I should have, you know.
Yeah, this is, again, yeah, this is from myself. Let's Kill Hitler. And oh my God.
Yeah, Let's Kill just Hitler is definitely the lowest point.
Yeah,
in
like,
the entire...
we can all agree that Let's Kill Hitler is probably the worst episode of Doctor Who ever.
Yeah, I was going to say, if we don't count the revelation at the very end of Series 6,
oh, yeah.
The best revelation ever.
You want to talk about that now that you've
brought
it up?
Do we want to segue into that?
All right, well, you brought it up. Go for it.
All right, the great history of the Religious Order of the Silence. The Silence is the Religious Order of shit not getting too meta. They're the villains based on an in-joke.
Yeah, because at the end of the episode, the big question that the Silence don't want asked is, Doctor Who?
Doctor Who? And it's like, you
see,
did that?
This question in the universe, somehow.
Oh my God, that made me so angry. That made me, like, almost throw my computer across the room when I watched The Wedding of River Song. Because aside from all the other horse shit that occurred in The Wedding of River Song and how The Wedding of River Song's timeline played out in just the worst possible way, and just the implications of River Song's entire life that made me feel really bad for her as a character.
But before we get away from the Doctor Who question, I'm trying to rack my brain of what on earth could they mean by that? Why would that be the oldest question? And I'm like, the only way that they can resolve this is Doctor Who is secretly God. Because that's the oldest question.
Yeah, I mean, so
if they don't go in that direction, I don't know where they're going to go.
I mean, basically what they set up is that somehow knowing the Doctor's name will break the universe.
Except that the Doctor's name has been said on screen before in a Stephen Moffat story.
Has it really?
Yeah. That's how,
But he whispered it, right? Like, the audience has never heard it.
The audience has never heard
it. So if the audience knows Doctor Who's name,
Well, I think it's more like...
It's not that the audience knows the name. It's that River Song, he told River Song, and River Song told him when she died. So it has been
said. That's the library.
Yeah, so he's said the answer to the question before, if that's, you know, the important thing is the Doctor's name.
And of course, presumably he's told other Time Lords and such.
The Master knew his name.
Yeah, it wasn't a secret.
I think it's a matter of his name. It's actually them saying, if you take this in-joke seriously, the universe will become too silly. Because that was what happened when we saw, like, the universe, quote, end, was the universe got too silly.
Yeah. Okay, so talking about the end of seasons, I actually want to talk about the end of season 5 for a minute. With the Pandorica, because we kind of skipped over that to the end of season 6. So the Pandorica is this thing they've been hinting throughout the season, and it's like this thing is it will open, and the implication is that it will open and something really terrible will come out. And I actually really liked the reveal that it was actually going to open and the Doctor was going to be put in. I thought that was really cool. And then like the Evil League of Evil showed up, and it was like Daleks, Daleks, Cybermen. Rhino people,
Suntarans.
The Suntarans are the dwarf guys who love
battle,
they're
the dwarf
right?
guys who love battle.
And a couple of other races. And they all show up and they're all there. And it's like, why is anyone but the Daleks here?
Well, the implication was that they were all so scared of the Doctor blowing up the universe that they were all going to put him in the Pandorica.
Right.
Except the problem I had with that was in later seasons you found out that it was the Silence who scared them, because the Silence end of the universe, and the Silence is the order of the end joke.
Right. See, the thing I didn't understand about it was that, as I was under the impression that of those groups, only the Daleks had access to time travel. Like, I was pretty sure that was a thing, right? Like, only...
No, Suntarans have traveled through time before.
Really? When have they done that?
This is in earlier seasons of Doctor Who, like back, and I think the fourth or fifth Doctor, but Suntarans have had ships that go back through time. The Suntarans, I think what they had in that episode with the Alliance was a gathering of the races who are sufficiently advanced enough to use time travel, which is Daleks, Cybermen, Autons.
I was always under the impression that none of those guys could use time travel, and the Suntarans specifically, because there's a line, and I forget what episode it's in, where a Suntaran says, the biggest war in the galaxy, and we weren't allowed to take part. And he's talking about the Time War.
I thought that was always implied that the Time Lords barred the Suntarans. because they didn't want younger races than themselves and the Daleks getting involved.
I guess. Maybe they do have time travel. That just weirded me out because I didn't really understand what the other races brought to this party because the Daleks' technology is so much more advanced than theirs. Like, you know, I'm reminded of the, I think it was, what, season 2 finale with the bad wolf, with the wolf tower and the Cybermen invasion. And the Cybermen are like, this is war. And the Daleks are like, this is not war. This is pest control.
You should have let me do that line. That was...
Oh, Graham, do it.
All right, Graham, go ahead.
This is not war. This is pest control.
Yep, there you go.
I'm rather proud of my Dalek
And I just
voice.
Remember, and I'm, you know, I'm just thinking of the level of technology the Daleks have and comparing it to the levels of technology that the other races have. And I'm just like, I don't really get why the other races are even here.
Maybe because the Daleks needed, like, cheap help and they offered them food.
They'll take you to McDonald's afterward.
Maybe, I guess. The Daleks need,
A dime!
Energy to make. That's energy they could just ask somebody else to go do it.
I guess. I was also very confused by the Romans' inclusion. Like, I know plot-wise, the Doctor needed to get the Romans over because so they could then be revealed that the Romans were actually plastic Romans made from Amy Pond's memory for some reason.
Well, they were supposed to be Autons. That was one of the races in the Alliance.
Right, and it was like, all right, so I understand that part. I don't understand what the Doctor thought these Romans were going to do if they got attacked by robots with lasers.
Form a phalanx, Oren.
Form a phalanx and deflect the lasers with their shields.
I mean, granted, they did have a point earlier where Rory stabbed a Cyberman with his sword, and I was like, wait, so...
Cylon? We don't know.
Like, so bullets...
Thanks to the order of shit getting too meta.
It's like, so bullets will bounce off Cyberman armor, but swords go right through them. If only we'd known about this back when the Cybermen were invading Earth.
I mean, yeah, you would think that'd be something the 10th Doctor would have remembered when, the Cybermen first showed up in Flesh and Steel. He would have been like, oh, we've got to get swords! You've got to get swords and stab them!
No, the way you beat Cybermen is with a father's love.
Take a bunch of dads. It shows us that robots are just weak versus swords. Like, it's just an elemental weakness. It's rock, paper, scissors. Robots, like, weak to swords, strong against bullets.
Right, so Lillian was referencing, I think it's the God Complex?
No, Closing no. Time. Closing Time.
God Complex.
Where the Doctor teams up with the Dad of the Year, who we met in a previous episode. I forget his name. I actually do like that character.
Yeah, character's fine.
I was excited at the beginning of that episode. Little did I know.
And then, so Lillian, explain what more about that, because at the end of that episode, the Cyberman... I can't keep these Doctor Who villains straight. The Cybermen are, like, taking the dad and, like, putting him in the Cybermen costume.
And then the baby, like, he hears his baby crying, and it's so powerful that he just wills himself not to be a Cyberman.
Yeah, he sacks up and he goes, I'm too emotional to be a robot.
To be fair, Cybermen, like, part of their conversion is that they are supposed to have their emotions drilled out.
But so far, like, in all the other worlds that the Cybermen have taken over... This has never come up before.
Well, I actually will give... This scene didn't bother me as much as it bothered you. And there is one other episode where this has happened.
I realize, how can you be upset about swords cutting Cybermen, but not be upset about a father's love overpowering them?
Well, I'm not saying it didn't upset me at all. It did upset me a little. But there is one other example of that happening. And it's... do you remember the episode where this lady teams up with the Cybermen?
It's like one of the last four episodes of the fourth season before End of Time.
It's like part of the special
Victorian
series.
London.
Yeah, and this lady teams up with them, and the implication is that she's teaming up with them because this is the only way she as a woman can advance, and it's like, nice. Way to make the oppressed women look like the bad guys, Doctor Who. That's what I remember, maybe that's wrong, but I do remember that she was able to resist by being, like, super strong-willed.
And remember the head of Torchwood, even though she gets fully converted, her mind stays her own in Army of Ghosts.
Right.
And she starts shooting down the Cybermen, saying in the Cyberman voice that she did her duty for Queen and Country.
Yeah. So, you know, what weirded me out about that was why all the other Cybermen broke.
I think there's two kinds of Cybermen.
Sorry, Lily, you said something? We missed you.
Daddy's love.
Yeah, I guess. I guess that was a load-bearing Cyberman.
I think this is actually explained. There's some Cybermen who are cyber controllers. This is a real thing.
Uh-huh.
And they're supposed to transmit, like, Cyberman consciousness to all the other Cybermen and give them orders. So I think they were making him into one of those, and maybe they uploaded the signal into his head before fully taking him over, because they're dumb.
It also weirded me out that we never actually learned what those Cybermen were doing there, like, how they had gotten there, why they were there. And it also, I was also sad because in closing time, the implication is that Earth no longer has any form of defense against, like, aliens. Because if Unit was still around, they could have cleaned that Cyberman nest out right quick.
Or Torchwood.
Yeah, or Torchwood. Torchwood.
Although apparently Unit has just been taking a break and they're coming back in Series 7.
Really?
Yep.
All right, well, that's, I guess,
just been taking
a
break. Martha, you know, got tired of showing up sometimes. Freeman Agyeman couldn't get contracted, so...
Well, Martha is busy being married to Mickey for
racism.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's racist.
They were the only two black characters on the show, so they were like, they have to get married, even though I think they were only ever on screen together once.
To be fair, it is nice because at least Martha gets laid.
But Martha was...
I always thought Martha deserved to get laid.
Well, she was already engaged, though. Like, we never met her husband, but
she
got
engaged.
Oh,
yeah, she was engaged to that one dude in Unit. That's really lame, then.
Yeah, we don't know who it was, but we know she was engaged.
Maybe Mickey joined Unit, maybe that's who they were talking about the whole time. That would actually be hilarious to me if she met him off screen, and then he was the one she was engaged to the entire time.
I guess that would be possible.
I'm going to choose to believe that because it's funny to me.
That works.
The most consistent point in Doctor Who canon.
I was going to say, that's also, it's a lot better wedding than the wedding of River Song, if we want to segue into the River Song plot.
No, wait, hang on. I want to mention this.
We have to leave how terrible River Song and anything related to her is towards the end.
I want to mention the parts of these two seasons that I actually liked, because I didn't hate all of them. There are actually some good episodes in here, and they are the ones that, for the most part, have nothing to do with the main plot. And I think my favorite one, like, was the Doctor's wife.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman.
Because Neil Gaiman wrote it. Although, to be fair, it was my favorite before I knew Neil Gaiman wrote it, lest anyone accuse me of...
Tell Neil Gaiman wrote it, like, years ago when he was just, like, in college or something, and he just wanted to write for Doctor Who.
This was supposed to be for the last season, for season 5, but they couldn't fit it in.
I mean, you could have put K-9 in that episode and removed Amy and Rory. It would have worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could have had that in season 4, in the end of season 4.
Yeah, and I really liked it. I thought it was a great episode. I really loved the relation. Like, I thought it gave us closure to this relationship that the Doctor and the TARDIS have had since, like, the beginning of the show that we've always wondered about, and we finally got some closure on it.
Instead of Matt Smith being the Doctor, it could have been Colin Baker. Like, it's a Doctor Who episode, but it's an actual Doctor Who episode.
It's the big elephant in the room that's been there too long.
Yeah, and they finally gave us some resolution. And I really loved the actress who was playing the Doctor, the TARDIS. I don't remember her name.
Yeah, not Helena Bonham Carter.
No, but she looks like Helena Bonham. Saran Jones, I think, is her name.
Yeah, not Helena Bonham Carter.
No, not Helena Bonham Carter at all.
I would say that, you know, that's my one complaint.
That it should have been Helena Bonham Carter.
Yeah, but I am badly.
Not everyone can be Helena Bonham Carter.
It's a sad truth.
Well, she could have.
I loved this episode for that. I also loved, there's this one point in the episode where there was that ooh, do you remember, that the asteroid mind was controlling?
Yeah.
It died. And Matt Smith delivers a very subtle but very powerful line when he says, another ood I failed to save. And it was like, there he is! There's the Doctor! Where has he been? He's finally back!
He showed up for about 5 seconds, and then we had the rubber flag.
Why are they evil every time they show up, and he acts surprised every single time? Like, what ood aren't evil? Why is this one being evil? It happens every time.
They do need to have a little bit more establishment of, like, look how sweet the Ood are. We need to see more happy Ood, less controlled.
Well, I never thought they were evil in, like, the Series 4 episodes.
No, I mean, in Series 4 episodes we saw them in, they were either being, like, terribly abused, or in the one episode where
evil because of some outside force. We need to see natural Ood.
Well, we did. There was Season 4.
That's not the norm. We always see them when they're being horribly abused.
I'm saying that as the viewer. Like,
yeah, that's true. We do need to like some more.
But it's happened pretty consistently.
At the near the end of season four, you saw the Ood in their natural state, which was terrible things were going to happen to him.
I mean, I do really love that the end of that episode because it's sweet.
I like the Ood. I think they're cool. It's just that like he seems surprised every time one shows up and starts doing bad shit. But it's been every other time he's seen the Ood that keeps happening.
Yeah. But
how cool the Ood are, and I'm like, can we just like see the Ood like hanging out, give them information, just like fucking do something?
I have a suspicion that it's because the Ood makeup is really expensive, and so when they have the Ood, they're like, we need to get as much mileage out of this Ood as we can. paid through the nose for this Ood. But the other thing that I really liked about the Doctor's Wife was one little throwaway line that they had where the Doctor established in canon that Time Lords can change genders when they regenerate.
Yeah.
Which means the next Doctor can be a woman.
That would be really cool. I would like a female Doctor.
So what was that, Dave?
I thought this was the Doctor's final regeneration.
No, he's got one more.
I thought that was 12.
He has 12 regenerations, and we are on the 11th. We are on the 11th Doctor.
Yeah.
I would say that they, because of River Song and her sacrifice in that terrible episode, it's possible that he might have more lives now. Because she has sacrificed all of her lives.
We want to go back to Let's Kill Hitler?
No, not yet. I'm just saying that the Doctor, like, they have put in this idea that could continue the series. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
We go back to Let's Kill Hitler. I was going to bring up...
Let's Kill Hitler. I feel I need to save that.
All right. Okay, so we're not going back to Let's Kill Hitler.
I was
going to
talk about Rebel Flesh and the Almost People and how those were... They were like the Impossible Astronaut in Day of the Moon, and that they could have been good episodes if they were done better.
See, I actually really liked those two episodes, except for the fact that Amy's bigotry is so powerful you use it in science tests.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the Doctor also acted weird and, like, not consistently...
Hypocritical is the word.
What I want to know is two things. One is that why is Amy a proxy for the real Amy rather than like, you know, an autonomous being like the two Doctors standing side by side or anyone else we see?
Oh, with that? Well, that's a whole other can of worms.
I thought that was just the Silence because the Silence are douches.
Well, but the Silence doesn't actually have to hook her up. They could have just copied her.
Yeah, who knows?
The Silence doesn't make any sense anyway.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I actually very much enjoyed The Rebel Flesh and The Almost People. I thought it was pretty good, and I liked... I actually thought the Doctor was pretty on form in this episode. I was a little confused that the Flesh was able to scan him just by him being in its presence. I sort of assumed he would need to be immersed in it or something, but, you know.
There was also... The part of the episode that bothered me was he says he's a meteorologist, and he's being a really convincing government official with his psychic paper. And then he puts his hand in the Flesh and wiggles it around. It's like, that's not part of your meteorologist disguise.
The part that bugs me is the very end where he spends two episodes establishing how the Flesh are people. They're just as real people as you or me, blah, blah, and then he turns around and shoots Amy.
That part at the end, I couldn't believe that he just did that. Like, we had two episodes, like Dave just said, we had two episodes, the entire point of which was that the Flesh, even when they are not, like, active on their own, even when they're just being piloted, they are actually fully alive people, and that.
I guess the reason why the whole piloting thing happened was because of they were spying on him. I guess.
Right. I mean that part, like, you know, the Silence having Amy like pilot the Flesh, her Flesh doll, instead of the Flesh doll being its own person. Like, sure, why not? But the fact is, they established very firmly in Rebel Flesh and Almost People that even the gangers who are being piloted are still sentient creatures. Their consciousness is just being suppressed. And if they get a jolt of energy, which is basically what the storm was, they will become fully sentient people. And apparently this has actually happened before.
He does say that it's early technology.
This is actually a thing that had happened before. Like, they mentioned that there have been a couple of instances of gangers like going nuts and killing people. Like this,
they mentioned that.
So this is not a once in a lifetime event. And then the Doctor just turns around and murders Amy's flesh avatar, like it's not a person.
Yeah, and for all the speculation you can have about why he did that or why Amy was piloting her own flesh puppet, like, it's speculation. Like, it's not really established, like, in the episode why they did that.
Yeah, and that part, I was just like, wait, what? What?
Yeah, but like that happens again in The Girl Who Waited, where he just flat out kills a future Amy. It's a weird character trait.
Like he tells Rory, like, sure, you can have two wives, no problem, no problem, no problem. Then they get to the TARDIS, he locks her out, he's like, fuck you, choose one.
Yeah, well, I'll admit, I actually liked The Girl Who Waited. I liked Road Warrior Amy. I thought she was really cool.
I think the episode is misplaced.
If that were a season 5 episode, it would be a good episode. Or at least it would be an okay episode.
I mean, I will say, the reason I liked The Girl Who Waited and why the whole, like, Rory waited 2,000 years for her doesn't terribly bother me is that I never bought that Rory waited 2,000 years. He's waited 2,000 years, but he's apparently exactly the same. Like, that part I was just like, I don't believe it. He goes into hibernation mode or something. That's the only way I could believe that it actually happened. Or because his brain is made of plastic, he's completely static or whatever. Like, I thought Amy's reaction to seeing him after 36 years of living in a death hospital made perfect sense.
Look, I will point out that death hospital, like, and this again is comparison, if you want to say plastic, static, whatever, but he was pulling her along, probably had to kill a few people, like human people, to protect her. She is killing robots that are zombie speed. Like, they walk the same shambles pace as zombies. And, like, she's basically has a AI that will show her anything that she wants. She can learn about anything that she wants. She can go to any of the exhibits, and all she has to deal with is zombies that might kill her.
Yeah, that's...
Like, I don't feel that you would turn into the person that they created for that story. Like,
I just have a lot of problems with that episode as a general thing.
Yeah.
Like, Amy knows to the day when Rory's going to show up and that he will show up. You know, like, so why is she upset when she's like, you never came for me. It's like, you know he's coming for you, and you probably know why.
Yeah, and I do think, even though I'm in the minority and I actually did like the episode, I do think there was a huge missed opportunity because, like, they very quickly, after they get the two Amys together, the two Amys immediately start, like, saying the same things together and, like, finishing each other's sentences. And it's like, no, guys, hang on. Like, if I met myself even 5 years ago, I don't think we would talk enough alike that I could, you know, say the same thing and finish my own sentences.
Helen
Rory spends the entire episode up to that point going, you're really different from Amy. What the hell happened to you? Why are you so weird?
They missed the point. The really obvious point of dramatic interest was they should have had them be very different, not get along, and then have like that moment where they both needed to be concentrating on something. That could have been the big like moment where they both, you know, concentrated on the same thing, and, you know, hopefully it would have been Rory. That they both cared about, and then that would have been the point where their two completely divergent personalities meet, and it would have been dramatically interesting. But they did it way too early in the episode.
Yeah.
I think also my problem is that Road Warrior Amy is way too Mary Sue. Even if she had been as much of a Mary Sue up till that point, like, she built, like, she wields a katana and cuts off robots' heads left and right, and she built a sonic screwdriver out of scrap parts, and like, why are you cutting off these robots' heads when you said yourself, this just brings more robots, and B, they get shut down by frequencies that you could probably replicate with the sonic screwdriver anyway.
If you have one.
At no risk.
Yeah, that's fair.
There was also that episode, I think, brings up another thing which I wanted to bring up with Rebel Flesh and Almost People, which is the weird double standard that Amy holds Rory to.
Yeah, like,
she's emotionally cheating on him all the time and abusing him, and then if Rory shows the slightest interest in another woman, or doesn't show up on time.
With her, and he's like, what is that? She's like, that's my pet. And you're like, what? You're not like, no, I was lonely, and I wanted, like, I missed you so much that I had to have some kind of interaction with something, and you were the person that I really wanted to be with. It's like, nope, that's my pet. Fuck you, Rory.
Also getting super judgmental of his concern for Jennifer in Rebel Flesh and Almost People, even though Jennifer is clearly a woman in distress and he's a nurse.
Yeah, she just, I don't know, that, I was gonna say, as weird as it is, I actually think their relationship is better in season 6 And I actually think that the writers realized how crappy their relationship was, which is why Rory died in, which one was it, The Hungry Earth?
Cold Blood, actually.
Yeah, in Cold Blood. They basically reset their relationship, because Rory dies, and then he comes back, like, later, but she didn't remember him for that entire time, and their relationship is almost like the rest of it never happened. And it's still not great, but it's better. Aside from that one point in Let's Kill Hitler, it never gets as bad as it was in season 5.
I just wish that in one point during The Girl Who Waited, like, either Rory or Amy, any one of them, or the Doctor even, would have just pointed out, like, okay, you waited 36 years, 8 months, and 4 days. Rory waited somewhere between 2 and 4 millennia for you.
Yep.
Like, someone needed to tell Amy to shut up, and no one ever does.
Yeah, like, if Rory had just said, hey, like, I've been through that. I know what it's like. Like, you know, point of empathy for them to bond over. And that those two, like, old Amy and Rory could have, like, actually had something of a relationship.
It would have been a really sweet moment if she had actually been happy to see him, even as badass as she was. But, it's like, you know, they're equal now.
They were trying too hard to make her too tough for no reason.
Like, especially in the setting that they gave her. Like, if they had gone a little bit more, like, actual road warrior, she's stuck in a road warrior time period, like, that would have made sense. But she's in a pleasure dome.
It also creeped me out a little bit how cavalierly the Doctor and Rory were just like, all right, let's reset her.
Yeah.
It's like, let's go grab young Amy so this Amy won't ever exist, because this Amy's kind of a bitch and we don't want to deal with her.
So one thing that I realized rewatching the episode is that we only assume that, like, these robots are going to hurt her because that's what the Doctor assumes.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure. So all we know is that she was put to sleep by these robots, and it's hypothetical that she could come back.
That everything about the robots bothers me, just because they say that, like, the robots are going to kill you because they don't recognize you, but they have artifacts from Earth. They obviously know about humans. Like, it's not a mystery.
So, like, I'm hoping that maybe some writer will see that opportunity and bring her back.
Yep, and especially all that time they had that she had, she hacked this computer to do anything. You think she could have hacked the robots to realize that she's human and not give her death medicine?
Yeah.
That was the whole premise, was that they're trying to give her medicine that will kill her because she's not human, but apparently she could hack their entire programming, so I don't know why she didn't just change, like, that part.
The entire episode is really, like, it's trying really too hard to make a Mary Sue out of Amy and show her, like, how cool she could be, but how bad that would be for... I don't know what they were trying to do, but it doesn't fit.
It didn't make any sense.
No, like, I'll admit maybe this is just because, what's her face? The actress who plays Amy. I don't remember her
name. Karen Gillan.
Yeah, I honestly did think that Karen Gillan was really rocking Road Warrior Amy, and I liked her way more in that role. And I will definitely admit there are problems with that episode.
Had they brought along old Amy, I would have forgiven it.
Yeah, that was the thing that annoyed me, was when they dangled the possibility that both Amys would survive, and I was like, no, guys, I know they're not going to.
I have a random trivia question.
Yes.
Like, he's saying that he can't have two Amys in the TARDIS because that would be a paradox.
Yeah.
But doesn't he have, like, two sonic screwdrivers that are technically the same in the...
Yes, two Doctors.
Well, yeah, there has been two Doctors before, but, like, I feel like there's been duplicate objects in there before, and it hasn't been an issue.
Yeah, I was going to say, if we don't buy my idea that the Doctor was just suppressing his regeneration energy and the end of time never happened, then the Doctor literally had two Doctors in the TARDIS at the same time.
There's two Doctors.
Also, like, technically he had three Doctors because he transferred Doctor energy into Donna, so there were three Time Lords who were the same person in the same place in the TARDIS.
I mean, I'm a little more forgiving of it this time because, like, usually in those instances, those were either clones, or in the case of the sonic screwdriver, that was the end of a time loop. Whereas in this case, it's like, you know, in this case, it's if you take young Amy onto the TARDIS, then the events that created Road Warrior Amy can't happen. Whereas with the screwdriver, it's like, in theory, the Doctor could still do the thing where he gives the screwdriver to River Song, who then gives it to him. So
yeah,
theory,
like,
that loop is still stable.
Amy says, okay, well, let's all board the ship. That already creates the paradox. Like, that already starts it.
Yeah, the fact that young Amy was already on the ship at that point, it was, like, they already changed that was the part that weirded me out, was that once they decided to change things, like, because Amy straight up changed things. So she was like, Road Warrior Amy was like, I am changing things by helping you. This is not the way events went down.
He didn't say that it would break the timeline. He said that the TARDIS couldn't handle the paradox.
Yeah.
I bring up the Sonic Screwdriver, because I would think it would be the same thing. Though I don't remember.
Or I'm pretty sure the TARDIS has been mentioned to have a paradox inhibitor anyway.
Yeah, well, that's a distinct... I don't really know what's up with that. That is really weird. Yeah, Graham?
Two things, which are, one, the TARDIS back in Series 3, if we remember, the Master just had to make some adjustments, and it became a paradox-generating machine.
Yeah.
Of Oclophane to kill their ancestors without any problem. And, like, all the Master had to do was press some buttons in the back and turn the TARDIS, like, red light.
The Doctor's not very good at using the TARDIS. So.
There is that. The second part was, if paradoxes are such a big deal, why does he ever allow River Song on the fucking TARDIS? Because her entire existence is a paradox that is only kept stable by not, you know, pointing out her existence to her.
Yeah, I was about to say, the girl who waited points out the entire problem with the arc of Season 6, where it's like, nope, we have to adhere to this timeline, it has to happen. But the girl who waited is like, fuck it, let's make a paradox and make sure this shit never happens.
Yeah, do we want to talk about River Song now?
We could. We can talk about River Song and how...
Like, what else do we have to talk about? It's most of Season 6.
Yeah, well, hang on. I want to go back to Season 5 for a minute, because there might have been some other things in there that I liked. Because I'm trying to come up with some stuff that I enjoyed. I did like The Time of Angels, the one where the weeping angels come back.
The Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone were really good, and River Song was still River Song there.
Yeah, they hadn't gotten into bullshit paradox.
I feel bad for Alice Kingston.
No, you go ahead, Lillian.
I read this thing that I thought was kind of interesting. The Silence aliens were created based off of the Scream painting. And apparently they were trying to make it the scariest villain, like, ever. And some of the actors felt that they were even scarier than the Weeping Angels. And I just kind of felt bad, because it's like,
No.
The
scariest things are the kids in the gas masks and the Weeping Angels.
Yeah, you're never going to be scarier than kids in gas masks. I mean, even the Weeping Angels aren't that scary. And they're pretty scary.
Yeah, the kids in gas masks going, "Are you my mummy?" It's just like, it's really gets under your skin.
Yeah, the Weeping Angels are really scary until you realize that you can, like, defeat, until you kind of figure out that you can defeat them by looking at them a bunch, and then they stop being quite as scary. Gas mask kids never.
Super Mario World. Like, all you have to do is walk backwards.
Gas mask kids will never stop getting scarier.
Although Time of Angels did effective with some things with the Weeping Angels, and some things it actually felt less effective than Blink, because it kind of took away their quantum mechanics toobly-dooble.
Mm-hmm.
But it was scary in that there were so many of them, and all the statues were angels, so you couldn't just walk backwards,
right?
Because you'd walk right into another one.
Yeah, but I thought that was the part about the stinger at the end of the Weeping Angels, where it's like, it just shows them in courtyards and blah blah, where it's like, yeah, guess what, you know, this is still a problem.
Yeah, and although the Time of Angels was one of the... did also do a thing that Season 5 did a lot that really annoyed me, was the Doctor and Amy making a lot of references to things that apparently happened off-screen. Like, yep. And I was like, yeah, this is only, like, their fourth episode together.
Amy's talking the off-screen adventures.
Season 5 and 6, because the huge problem with River Song, and we'll get back to this when we talk about River Song, is that all of her interactions are like a crazy girlfriend describing what she did with your best friend when your best friend has never once spoken about her. She's like, we went on a date, we went ice skating, blah, blah, and, like, you never see any of it.
Well, like, and especially, like, when the Doctor first, like, jumps out and meets River Song in the Time of Angels, they start comparing notes about what they've done together, and I'm like, wait, you guys have only ever met once before, and, yeah. Like, she was very cryptic about what she knew about you, and now you're treating it like you've done this a dozen times. When did this happen? And then Amy is like, that you're letting them call you sir. You never let anyone call you sir. And it's like, no one has ever tried to do that while you were around, Amy. How do you know that?
I think it's just a thing that Stephen Moffat wants the universe to feel bigger than it is. Like, you know, but...
more time is passing.
Yeah, but it's...
I'm okay with stuff happening off screen after maybe a season, but this is only like 3 episodes. We're still establishing how Amy and the Doctor relate to each other. But apparently they had really important adventures off screen. And yeah. It's like, God, that made me so, like, mad. So
they get a shoehorn in movies after they've killed off the Doctor effectively.
Sure, maybe.
For River Song, I was always more forgiving of it because that was sort of established to be her character back in Silence of the Library, where she
like,
showed up.
Back in seasons 4 and 5, I would buy that, but since she's so prominent in season 6, we should be seeing these things.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just like, I think River Song should have been the companion.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like,
was built for the companion role, and she was such a cool character, and what happened to her is such a waste. I love Alex Kingston in the role.
We were in their room in the back and just like popped up every once in a while. They were like, we're still here. We're in the TARDIS. Or if they went back to Earth and like...
Went back to Earth and like had babies and just never bothered anyone again.
I would be completely okay with that.
I would have been happy if like the entire kidnapping of the baby happened off screen. Like if that was still a plot point, but it wasn't all about Amy Rory, because I was done with them at the end of season 5. I didn't have any more interest in watching her abuse her boyfriend.
And like, you know, and then there were a couple of other episodes in season, you know, in season 5 that I still liked. Like, I did like The Vampires of Venice. That's a pretty good episode. But that's really it. Like, there was such, like, such weird stuff going, like, they just couldn't make up their mind on what was going on with like how much stuff had happened off screen, because then there are other episodes where Amy acts like this is the first time she's ever been time traveling.
Oh yeah, and there was the fact that even if Amy has had all these off screen adventures, she never puts any of this knowledge to use.
Yep.
Because in things like The Rebel Flesh, which is an otherwise good episode, Amy is one, a bigot, which you would think after having all these off screen adventures with the Doctor, she'd learn not to do, but she doesn't.
I really get the feeling that a lot of these problems come from having Stephen Moffat write a big bunch of scripts and not organize them properly.
And then
The Girl Who Waited, like I said, feels like a season 5 episode that got left over.
Yeah, and then in Rebel Flesh, there was the point where she's acting like she's a government official, and then they talk to her about the flesh, and she just makes this "what?" face, and she keeps asking questions like she doesn't understand.
Yeah, it's like there's a definite like cavalier attitude about that Amy has towards time travel in certain episodes, where she just doesn't seem to care. It's like she's not even interested in blending in. Like, that came out, I think, the most in the Vincent Van Gogh episode, where they're just, like, you know, they're not even pretending that they're from this time period. And it's being so obvious, and it's like they have never been time traveling before.
That's because it's a historical Doctor Who episode, you know. Those are known for their top power quality.
But I actually really liked their portrayal of Vincent Van Gogh, actually, is how you pronounce it, apparently. I actually really liked that their portrayal of him as a character. I was very weirded out that they, you know, the way they acted, and that they decided that showing him his exhibit would be a good idea.
Yeah, that was weird.
Like, I was just like, wait, aren't you a little bit worried that's going to break his mind?
Isn't that going to create a paradox?
Well,
no, because you know what? They have the paradox. Fuck it.
That was well said, Dave.
And then there was like, it was even weirder because that episode actually did establish that you can in fact change established events, because like there was the whole like little to Amy and the Doctor thing on the painting that was not there before.
Like, I'll say this for Doctor Who, is that like, if nothing else, traveling with the Doctor establishes that you can and will induce paradoxes at every opportunity, so just roll with it. Like, he describes it himself, the time is sort of a wibbly-wobbly thing, so just fucking roll with it.
Apparently, season 6, like, part of the Silence's goal was to create a fixed point in time where the Doctor dies, and I wish that they had done something a bit more interesting with that, because what is the difference between a fixed point and a not fixed point? Because the Doctor dances with that all the time, so, like, how do you force something into being a fixed point?
Alright, and so I guess, since we're talking about the fixed point in time, I was really, really bothered with what I like to call the make it look right solution to the Doctor dying, which is basically, and this is such a basic staple of time travel stories, where you have this paradox, like this event, and you can't change it because it's already happened. So the way you get around that is you go back in time and you make it look like the thing that is recorded as happening happened, but you actually make something different happen. And freaking Harry Potter did this. in when Harry Potter in book 3 had to use the time turner to save, I think it was the hippogriff.
Yeah.
But maybe it was someone else.
No, it was the hippogriff. You're right.
Oh, you know who did this? Fucking Red Dwarf did this when they had JFK assassinate himself.
Yeah, but like in Harry Potter, they made it look like because they had already seen Buckwheat die, or Buckwing, or whatever his name, Buckbeak. And they made it, but so when they actually used the time turner to go back, they made it look like Buckbeak had died, but they actually saved him. And in this episode of Doctor Who, that's like their big reveal. That's what their super brilliant plan is. Like one of the most basic tools of a time travel story. Which is why my Facebook status a while back was that Harry Potter is officially better at time travel than Doctor Who.
Yeah, and I can't argue with that because they are.
And it was just so weird, especially because we had a situation that was exactly the same as this back in the Waters of Mars. When they had this supposed fixed point in time, I'm using quotation marks here, and the fixed point was that this base had to explode and the astronauts in it all had to have been recorded as dying. And the doctor's like, I can't change any of this. Fixed point in time. And it's like, well, okay. Why don't you put all of them in the TARDIS and take them to someplace really far in the future where no one will ever, you know, from this timeline, will ever meet them. So history will go on exactly as it was supposed to go, but they won't be dead. At least give them the option to do that.
I think you could move them like 100 years in the future and just be like, well, good enough.
And the fact that he didn't do that made me think that it wasn't an option. And the thing is that then this is the part that gets even stupider, is that they introduced the Tesselecta, I think they're called.
Yeah, the Tesselecta, solely to be that Deus Ex Machina.
But the thing is, they already had a way to do it. They had the flesh. They already established the flesh. And apparently, despite what they said in the episode, the flesh avatar is not a person, because the doctor killed it without even worrying about it.
So, it's not a person unless you do some fancy tricks.
So why did they introduce a separate plot device when they already had one? And it's like, the silence already knows about the flesh, so you think this possibility would have at least occurred to them that we should double check and make sure it's actually the doctor that we're killing.
Yeah, you'd think, but again, they're the religious order of shit not getting too meta, and they include the headless monks in their ranks, so...
For some reason. What the hell is up with the headless monks? Alright, hold, hang on. Let's talk about A Good Man Goes to War. What the hell is going on in this episode? This is like an episode that 2 seasons ago would have been a secondary characters roundup episode, where we would have gotten all these secondary characters who we'd met before, and we knew who they were, and they would have come help the Doctor. But instead, we get a bunch of people we've never seen before. But apparently, they...
Cool.
Say what?
The lizard lady and her assistant were pretty cool.
Yeah, like, the lizard lesbians, I loved them. They were great, but we'd never seen them before, but they acted like we'd seen them before.
Yeah.
And, like, the Centauran, who, again, the Centauran was fine, but we'd never seen
him. Pirates we knew about.
Huh?
We knew about the pirates.
Right, we did see the pirates.
I don't know exactly how they finagled their way, into fighting.
God, the pirate part pissed me off even more, because that was a callback to the really stupid ending of that episode, where they decided to give one of the most notorious pirates in history a spaceship.
Oh, God.
That's a good idea.
That will happen.
Yeah, I can't imagine what especially since they had never really resolved his whole I need to have a lot of gold thing. Like, the doctor yelled at him about it, but they hadn't really fixed it. So there was no indication that he wasn't...
Deathlock can kill Cybermen. It can certainly turn around a pirate's nature.
All right, Oren Graham, help me out here. Like, let's say that Good Man Goes to War, secondary character roundup. Who have we actually met, pirates aside?
We met Blue Sky.
That they met, they helped, and had the ability to help them during this.
They didn't help the blue guy, though.
Oh, you mean who they could have used instead?
I'm struggling to think of anyone, honestly.
Alright, well, I mean, if they wanted to, they could have... I mean, obviously, this was probably a budget issue. But really, the doctor should have rounded up all of his, like, his old friends. Like, I don't know, K-9, Martha Jones...
Yeah, like...
Someone from UNIT, Captain Jack.
They called Rose and, like, Torchwood and everybody else, but, you know, like, just in seasons 5 and 6, like, let's restrict it to those two.
Okay, so if we're just talking about people they've already met?
Yeah.
Buddy, really.
Well, I mean, they could have brought one of the Silurians we actually met in Cold Blood and The Hungry Earth.
Oh, yeah, one of the instead of a different... I actually double-checked, because I don't think we've ever met this lizard woman before, and I double-checked, and we haven't.
Oh, hey, maybe they could have brought Canton Everett Delaware, the super agent, back.
Oh,
who was there for one episode and was hyper-competent
and
had access to Area 51. and had access to, like, what was it, zero dwarf star matter that apparently is just in Area 51 to build boxes out of.
The best box.
You can do with that shit. You gotta build boxes out of it.
You gotta build boxes and put doctors inside of it.
Listen, you don't want shit getting out of those boxes, so you put boxes in.
Like, he's gay for a black dude, too, so you can't have him on the show again.
I don't know what was up. Like, they could have... They should have established these characters if we were going to use them in this manner. And it's not like Stephen Moffat didn't have complete control of this show and couldn't have established some characters if he wanted to. I mean, I think he just, you know, he could have worked at it a little harder. And it was just weird.
I actually really like those characters overall.
Yeah, they could have all been fine. I'm really hoping we'll see them again in season 7, so that will at least kind of justify their existence.
I don't think that we will.
I
don't see any of them coming back except for possibly the blue dude, but probably not.
I was also very confused by the Spitfires with lasers.
Yeah, I hated that shit.
Because for some reason they brought in Spitfires with lasers, and their explanation was that they were going to blow up the outside of the base so that the fleet that they had outside wouldn't show up, and it's like, wait a minute, wouldn't the fleet seeing a bunch of Spitfires with lasers attacking their base be a pretty obvious giveaway?
They already took out Cybermen. It's good enough.
Well, I mean, then again, the Spitfires with lasers were the answer to Daleks, which was also really weird.
Yeah, just a little bit of horseshit right there.
The Spitfires with lasers were the stupidest plot device in the world.
I think what Doctor Who is trying to say is that nobody will ever get technologically more competent than the Spitfire. It was Britain's greatest achievement, and it continues to be into the future.
Yeah, I don't know what was up with that.
I think the worst part about this episode, though, is just the end, where it's like, okay, we've done all this stuff. We have to find the kid. Fuck babies, whatever. Like, yeah, we're just going to stop. We're not going to
And then they just give up.
We gave up. Let's go kill Hitler.
And well, and then, A Good Man Goes to War was also one of the early examples of characters fulfilling predestination paradoxes just because they decided that that's what they were going to do. Like, you know, because River Song is like, I can't go help because this is the time the Doctor will figure out who I am. But they figure out because for some reason River Song shows up and tells them.
Yeah.
I don't know why she did that, but she did.
Because she's their insane. Because she's their insane friend Mel's at that point.
Oh, right. And then in Let's Kill. No, this was still at the end of A Good Man Goes to War.
Oh, okay, never mind.
And then in Let's Kill Hitler, we meet their insane friend Mel's, who is easily the worst thing in the entire Doctor Who canon, as far as I'm concerned. It's like
she shows up and you already hate her.
It's like, hello, did I mention we have an insane friend named Melz who has apparently been our friend since childhood? And it's like, yeah, that explains...
about you?
Yeah, that explains why we never saw her in any of the episodes where we were hanging out just with Amy and Rory on Earth.
Mentioned her.
That would have made it better.
It would have at least made it, like, you know, consistent.
But it wouldn't have made the story that their insane friend Melz was connected to better.
Okay, one thing that I really don't understand is that they made River Song... specifically to kill the Doctor. And as far as I can tell, the reasoning behind, like, why she's the perfect killing the Doctor machine is that she's a Time Lord. And it's like, how does that help?
Yeah.
I don't understand how that would help. And then they brainwash her to become the worst, like, the best enemy. But they just make her into a psychopath that's like a Tasmanian devil. They just unleash her on things. And it's like, if you're going to make the nemesis to the Doctor, wouldn't that be more like, you know, Data's Moriarty? Like,
well, they would mean using the Master. They can't have the
Master. It's just that...
You have,
like, the Silence really wanted the Master, but the Master, like, was on vacation. So they're like, fuck, what do we do?
Who are we going to get? And then, like, it was even... And like, Lillian is right, and it was really weird to me where it was like, alright, so you created this lady, and you psychologically conditioned her to be the perfect killing machine against the Doctor. She throws off all of that psychological conditioning, and then you decide to basically, like, sedate her and put her in a suit that will force her to kill the Doctor, and it's like, why? At that point, why not just have anyone in the suit?
Or no one in the suit. Who needs to be in a suit?
The suit can apparently just do it itself.
Yeah, I would say with the laser. How did you kill him with the laser?
Yeah, just shoot him with lasers. Apparently that amounted to their entire
Why
plan.
Why not just ask a Dalek to do it? You could ask a Dalek to do it and they would do it for free.
Just one Cyberman. Just right time.
Like, Or not even, like, Daleks have a good track record with the Doctor, because in Journey's End, one of them shot him and he wasn't able to dodge, and he got hella exterminated. So just have a Dalek pop up out of the water and shoot him with the extermination beam. Twice.
Well, there's only, like, five to do. They can't really, the Daleks will be like, I don't know.
And you know what else was kind of weird? So we know that thing that the Doctor, you know, showed the Doctor dying wasn't actually the Doctor, it was the Tesselect ship, but it was regenerating. If they hadn't shot it again, would it have regenerated? Or was that just a special effect?
That was just a special effect it was producing. It was apparently producing enough heat waves to make it look like he was regenerating.
Okay. Sure, why not? Because it's not like you would... it's not like in the special suit that you built specifically to kill the Doctor, you would include any kind of targeting confirmation software.
No, shit, no.
Just to make sure, because, you know, it's not like the Doctor... The Doctor is notorious for not being tricky at all.
No one's ever been tricked by the Doctor.
The other thing that makes me really angry about Let's Shoot Hitler is not just River Song's, like, complete 180, but then her willingness to give up all of her regenerations for him.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, again, this is fan service to the Doctor. Nothing bad can happen to him. Nothing, like, we can't do anything mean. And we can't let this woman have, like, her own life that's...
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, I'll tell you what that was. That was, they created a bullshit plot hole, and then they needed to fill it with more bullshit, because they decided, for reasons that I cannot comprehend, they decided to establish that River Song can regenerate. Didn't need to do that. That was not required. They did. And so then they needed to establish a plot. They needed to fill that plot hole to explain why she didn't regenerate at the end of Silence in the Library.
You know what would make more sense that I think they were trying to allude to is that River Song is the Doctor. Like, that she just was his 12th regeneration and she was just fucking with him.
You know how awesome that would have been?
But it wasn't true, unfortunately.
Like, that would have made the most, like, that's the only thing I can think of that fits with all the plot lines is that River Song is just the Doctor's 12th regeneration, and then seasons, like, you know, 8 and 9 and whatever are just River Song Adventure Time.
That would be hilarious.
And you know something else, since we're back on things that piss me off about Let's Kill Hitler? So they have her, she regenerates, and she stops being, Nina Toysent, I think is how you say that? Nina Toysent White. Graham, you wrote a pronunciation.
Yeah, Nina Toysent White.
Yeah. And so she stops being that and becomes the actress that she's normally played by. I forget her name.
Alex Kingston.
And before, I'd always thought, yeah, Alex Kingston looks fine. I mean, she's, you know, I didn't have a problem with the way she looked. Honestly, it didn't matter to me. But yeah. Suddenly, in this episode, it was all about looks. And it was all about how hot Alex Kingston was, and how she was hotter than Nina White. And it was like, no, actually not.
Yeah,
I didn't actually care what River Song looked like until you brought it up, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You made a thing, and told me that this other character, this one character, was more attractive than this other character. And it's like, no, not really.
Objectively untrue.
Like, you can just look at it, and they're not.
I think Kingston's a better actress, but... not more attractive.
Which, again, wouldn't have mattered if they hadn't brought it up. It was like they were bringing up this issue that before had never been an issue.
That and, like, the whole regeneration thing made me go, what? Because I always thought that Time Lords were Gallifreyans. And the reason they regenerate is biological. Like, it's like why they have two hearts. They're not just Time Lords because they spend a lot of time traveling time. They're Time Lords because that's their species. And then it turns out that, no, you can become a Time Lord by traveling around in the Time Vortex. But...
well, just being in proximity to the Doctor Lord.
But, I mean, like, then the Doctor told his daughter in The Doctor's Daughter that she wasn't a Time Lady because she was just a clone of him. And you don't become a Time Lady by just being a clone of him. You have to, like, mature into one. And incredible amounts of horse shit.
Yeah.
Like, it basically goes back to, like, how does making her a time, like, a regenerative Time Lord thing help kill the Doctor? Like, you gave her regenerations. Right. That doesn't seem to work, especially since she basically goes kamikaze on a lot of shit.
Yeah.
I have to go back to A Good Man Goes to War for a second.
Okay.
Like, we have River Song, and she is a Time Lord, or part Time Lord, or whatever, you know, she's part Gallifreyan, apparently. Or was she part-time Lord, even though I'm not sure how you, like...
Genetically engineered.
I'm not sure how you figure that out by studying her DNA, but, like, let's roll with it. Say she is. During the entire episode, the Doctor's confused about how she could be part-time Lord, but, like, Amy and Rory keep going, like, how is this possible? How is this possible? He never once says, like, I don't know. I don't honestly know. He's, like, he leaves it up for them to figure out, or for Rory to think, like, maybe he fucked Amy at some point and it's not actually his kid, but he never, like, once just steps up and goes, like, no, that's not actually a possibility.
Yeah, because, again, this new Doctor has, like, a weird sadistic streak that I don't understand and is, like, completely...
And it's not like he never had an opportunity. Like, he had plenty of dead time where he could have just been like, nope, that could not have ever have happened. That's not what's going on here. But I don't know what is.
So you want to know another, like, weird point where the Doctor refuses to tell people stuff that would have saved them all a lot of trouble? Wedding of River Song. When they're in the whole, like, everything is broken timeline. And the Doctor has this plan where everything will be fine. But he refuses to tell them. And as a result, everything almost goes to shit because he won't tell them his super awesome plan. And it's just like, it's really, really meta. It's like the Doctor isn't telling them because they don't want the audience to know yet. And so it has to be mysterious. But there's really no reason for the Doctor not to at least tell River Song. Like, maybe by that he doesn't want to tell Amy because he wants Amy to think he's dead for some reason. Don't ask me why he wants that. But apparently he does. So that entire thing, I was just like, wait, what?
Maybe the Doctor gets off on Amy thinking he's dead because, I mean, in the Big Bang, he wanted Amy to think he was dead too until he showed up for her wedding because she stamped her feet a lot.
Yeah.
Another thing about the wedding of River Song.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like... thinking about it today, I was like, okay, why did he actually marry her? Because from my remembrance of the episode, like, and I rewatched this part, so I am going to answer my own question. Because I don't remember it being, like, a romantic thing at all. It was just like, okay, look, you are being a spoiled brat. We're getting married now, blah. And quite literally, when I rewatched it, it's like, he's basically... getting married to her so he can be the husband and win the argument.
Well, obviously, because wives have to do what their husbands say.
There's no other reason to do it. Like, there literally is no other reason to do it. Like, the entire time he's saying, I'm going to die, she says, no, I can't let you. He gets married to her and says, I'm going to die, and she's like, okay, honey.
Yeah, and now that I think about it, there are actually a couple of weird, like, sexist things in there that the Doctor does. There are a couple of points where, like, again, in Let's Kill Hitler, he, like, makes a jibe about how Amy...
Like, it's a bad episode.
Yeah, it's like he makes a jibe about River Song, about how she's a woman, and that explains why she's so crazy. And I was like, really? Like, I was like, did I actually just hear that?
To be
like,
fair...
of all the places to find sexism in television, I did not expect to find it from the main character of Doctor Who.
To be fair, there is one of the mini episodes, I think it's either Space or Time, where the Doctor and Rory, like, they go down to the lower level of the TARDIS, and then they tell Amy that they can't concentrate because she's wearing a short skirt and they can see up her skirt.
Really?
Yeah, this is a thing that happens.
I've never seen that. I'm really glad I never saw that.
That you should be, because it was super weird, and everyone was like, what? Did the Doctor really just say he can't concentrate because he's looking at Amy's crotch? And apparently, yes. And it was all Amy's fault. They were like, oh, ho, 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 ho. And it was like, wait, what?
Oh, ho, ho. It's funny because men have no control over themselves when women are around, apparently. Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Oh, ho, 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 ho.
Oh, God.
You will note that was not something that the 10th Doctor ever did, even when Rose was around.
Rose was famous for her use of short skirts.
Amy, because he likes staring at her tits and ass. Because he gets distracted by them a lot.
Yeah, this new Doctor... that's just another really weird part of the relationship this new Doctor has with Amy. The whole thing.
Well, I mean, like, the relationship between Amy and the 11th Doctor is so much... like, I liked the relationship between Rose and the 10th Doctor. Even when people didn't like Rose and they were like, Rose is really obnoxious and I wish she'd quit being so in love with the Doctor, but I always bought that relationship.
Yeah, like, it was a legitimate love. Yeah. Every subsequent love, I don't understand why there aren't more people railing, like, come on, stop this obsession. Stop worshipping him. Like, well, he's cool. He's just not that cool.
Well, at least between the Rose and the Doctor, comparative to, like, Amy and the Doctor, Rose and the Doctor developed over the course of their series.
Yeah. It wasn't just, like, they meet and now they're immediately in love.
Even the friends. Like, Rose, like, even in, like, the fifth or sixth episode with her, is still questioning the Doctor. Like, she still doesn't quite trust him.
Yeah, and Martha, even. Like, her relationship with the Doctor built. And it did build quicker, but you could see where she got a crush on the dude, because he shows up in her hospital, saves her from an alien invasion, and takes her through space-time.
I still feel like
she's going to get a crush on him.
Yeah, whereas Amy, he just showed up one day and was like, hi, I'm the Doctor, and then immediately left and came back 20 years later.
That makes him a hero.
Well, I mean, women, you know, I guess respond well to that kind of emotional abuse, I guess, is the message of this show. I don't, fuck if I know what they've
going on. Like, I really dislike Amy. I mean, I've already said it, but I really do, for the point that, like, her story is supposed to be, like, she's the girl who lives in a house, like, all by herself. This doesn't make sense. Then she gets her entire family back. Her timeline is fixed. It's all awesome. That should have been the end of her. Like, she needs to go back and spend time with her family that didn't exist before.
Well, to be fair, they had to resolve... that was one of another problem with Season 6 was... in this previous four series, they had a really great focus on... In each series, there'd be a mystery. And it would always be revealed at the end. And this does point out what Lillian was saying at the beginning of the show, that they would write themselves into these plots where the villains had such a brilliant plan that the only way the Doctor could beat it was bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still more interesting than things that they did now. Because, like, in Series 1, they had the Bad Wolves. And that was the overarching mystery, what's the Bad Wolves? In Series 2, Torchwood, what's Torchwood?
Yeah.
In Series 3, vote Saxon / you are not alone. In Series 4, why are the stars disappearing? And each time they revealed this, you were like, oh my god, it made sense. Series 5, they kind of did that with the cracks in space-time.
The hole in the wall was at least a thing.
Except that the cracks in space-time were then caused by the silence. So, and then it felt like Series 6 couldn't decide if it was going to, like, have the silence be... No, the silence wasn't the overarching mystery plot.
The mystery
was, how are they going to stop the Doctor from being killed? Which was a terrible overarching mystery, because you know they're going to stop the Doctor from being killed, because it's Doctor Who!
I feel like it was less that... I mean, that was the focal point, but the mystery of Season 6 is, who the fuck is River Song? And, you know, for a season that goes, who the fuck is River Song, we think you'd spend more than, like, 3 episodes with River Song.
Yeah, just a little.
And have more of a better explanation for who River Song is.
And yeah, you know, explanations to why they fall in love. I mean, when you look back, like, there's been a lot of other, well, not a lot of other ladies, but there have been ladies that the Doctor could have hooked up with. River is not one of those people. There's not chemistry there.
Yeah. You know, another thing that really weirded me out was Madame Kavara. We never found out why she was helping the silence.
I thought it implied that she was just, like, religiously devoted to not shit, not getting too meta.
I guess, but I sort of assumed there was a deeper connection there.
Nope.
Like, we never found out anything about her or why she was so, like, she clearly seemed to have a personal hatred for the Doctor, and I was just like, is something going on here? Are we ever gonna...
It's the Doctor.
She just really hates the in-joke. She really is mad at that in-joke.
And then there was...
Actually, you know, when we went to an alternate timeline where the world was ending... the wedding of River Song. I thought, after seeing Amy with the eye patch, that that was Amy all grown up.
Yeah, you know, I thought that's maybe what it was going to be, too, and I was like, yay, this will have some relevance.
You know, complete aside, I think she hates that in-joke because she looks too much like Pearl Forrester from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
That's true.
That's possible.
She's just fucking tired of it by this point.
And, you know, speaking of the last episode... That sequence when, like, all the silent guy, all the monster things are breaking out and fighting the marine dudes, and I'm just watching, and I'm like, guys, the silence attack is slow and awkward. Shoot them with bullets. It will clear that right up. And it's just like, I can't believe that the silence could possibly win. And in fact, their whole, like, memory trick, it's cool at first until you realize that if they ever did that, like, just walked up to a dude with a gun... I'm pretty sure his first reaction would be, shoot the monster!
Isn't that pretty much just how UNIT rolls? Like, they just shoot whatever's, like, not human.
That is kind of how UNIT rolls.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if UNIT was around, they would have figured out this whole... In fact, according to this timeline, The silence existed through Torchwood. Torchwood would not have stood for this crap.
Torchwood would have noticed.
Torchwood would have figured out this silence bullshit in like 5 minutes and dealt with it right quick.
They might have fucked it up, but they would have dealt with it.
Yeah, I mean, I was so sad that apparently Torchwood and UNIT just don't exist in seasons 5 and 6. They're just not around. And it should be noted that when I say Torchwood, I mean the pre-Cyberman invasion Torchwood. I don't mean the Captain Jack bullshit. I'm talking about the giant overarching...
I was just going to say Captain Jack's Torchwood isn't actually Torchwood. It's Captain Jack's posse.
Yeah. I'm talking about the actual Torchwood. The guys who knew things that the Doctor didn't know. Remember when that used to be a big deal? I do.
Yeah.
I do too.
I also remember a time...
Long for the days when UNIT would roll on the scene and just shoot anything that looked at them funny.
Yeah, it was just so weird that those guys were not in this at all. And, you know, did they ever explain why no one in seasons 5 and 6 knows about the Doctor? Because they made that a plot point. Like, they were like...
They never did explain that.
I don't think they ever explained it. Did they? Did I miss something?
I think the best explanation you're getting is that Silence brainwashed them somehow, but that's about it.
I guess.
Too much in the season is left too vague, or, you know, like, it's, like they imply things, but they don't, you know, like, show you things, or...
That would be a good idea for the Silence to do, you know, just massively, don't remember the Doctor.
Like,
the Doctor saved the world too many times.
There are the people that are working under the Silence who seem like they've been propagandized, where they're like, oh, I heard he did all this weird shit, and there's, like, the one lady stitching the embroidery, like, no, he saved us once. It was terrible, but, you know, he did.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it kind of gave you the feeling that maybe they're brainwashing them, but, like, obviously that lady still remembers, so who knows?
Yeah, that whole shtick is weird. And that was something that I kept expecting to get some resolution on, and I never did.
Especially since they introduce the headless monks, and you think, like, oh, they're gonna, like, fucking, like, brainwash them, and nope, they're monks.
They're not very effective monks. They're, like, that was another part of the Good Man Goes to War that always bothered me, was that they have that sequence, and they do this a fair amount, but it always bothers me when they have people with swords fighting against people who have lasers. Like,
you know, they try to shoot them in the head, but it's not there.
Oh. Well, actually, I was talking about the Silence, because the Silence can shoot, like, the Headless Monks can shoot lasers out of their hands.
Well, no, that was really effective, because they all shot each other.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That was a thing that they did. Yeah, I don't know, that whole...
They sure were organized.
Are able to shoot lasers out of their hands again?
It's just a thing they can do. That's a power they have for being Headless Monks. We also never found out why their swords were electrified. You know, the Headless Monks showed up once and never did anything.
They took out poverty, vow silence, and, they get to shoot lasers out of their hands, flaming swords. It's just they get for that.
We also never found out why those Marines only had one woman. Like, just
weren't
one.
Weren't they supposed to be the Church? I thought they were supposed to be the clerics from the Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone.
They were clerics. I don't know if they were supposed to be the same clerics.
Yeah, they were zealots, but I don't know what.
Likely, because those clerics were imprisoning River Song, in theory, for killing the Doctor. We didn't know that yet, but that was in theory what she was in prison for. These clerics are trying to kill the Doctor. So maybe they're just a very different incarnation of that Church.
Do we actually have a, like, reason as to why the Silence is a religious order? I mean, that sort of brings me back to the theory that...
Brainwashing!
That Doctor Who is God secretly. Because, like, otherwise, it's a religious order about shutting up this guy, alien.
Yeah, this guy.
Fuck that dude.
Shut up, that guy.
Shut up, that Doctor.
I mean, I know that it's partly on the, there's a great prophecy and they must change it, but still you'd think that, like, the religious order would have a bit more.
No, they're the religious order. Fuck that dude.
I also think they would, like, you know, maybe blow up Trenzalore.
Hmm?
Maybe blow up the place where, you know, people are compelled to answer stupid in-jokes.
Yeah. That would be the first thing I would do.
Wouldn't go there to answer stupid in-jokes? I mean, it wasn't a big thing. The Daleks did it in, like, 5 minutes. They were like, okay, a bunch of planets. Put them in the Medusa Cascade. Why not? Let's do it.
Well, the Daleks with the scientific order. Fuck that dude.
Get in there.
I mean, like, why not ask the Daleks, hey, in your, you know, planet-stealing shenanigans, could you steal this Trenzalore place and blow it up with a reality bomb so it never exists? Because otherwise an in-joke will be answered there. And people will create the silly verse.
Yeah, this show is just getting too meta. I feel like
They let that joke be answered. Colin Baker would suddenly come back. He'd have to start everything.
Don't we mean Tom Baker? Isn't his name Tom Baker?
Tom Baker.
One of the two. Both will come back.
We're talking about Scarf Man, right?
Yes, we are talking about Scarf Man, the iconic Doctor Who.
I love that guy. I would love to see that guy come back.
Fourth Doctor just comes back, punches Matt Smith in the head.
Yes, he has a curly mop and a butt and, like, an overbite, so you can't look at him and not think this is the silly verse.
It is the best verse.
All right, well, I'm about out of things that I wanted to say.
We can talk about River Song now and how my entire existence is a fucking paradox loop.
Yep, that is a thing.
Oh, God.
I only just thought about it, but I'm sticking with the fact that she's the 12th Doctor.
That would make more sense than what they actually gave her, because her entire existence, you'd think, would fall apart if she looked at it too hard.
Yeah.
She's their insane... Yeah, she's Amy Pond's daughter. Still not sure how that works, but okay. Who, back in time, was stolen by the Silence as little girl Melody, and they named her after their insane friend Mills, who was their doctor that the Silence sent back in time to spy on them.
Maybe.
Wait, no. Did I say their doctor? Because I meant their friend. Who was their friend that the Silence sent back in time to spy on them, presumably.
Since childhood.
And they named her after herself, and then... Her real name is a mistranslation. Her River Song name is a mistranslation of her real name, which is the insane friend Mel's name, which is her.
Uh huh.
And
uh huh.
Then they meet her earlier, and it hurts my brain. I'm like, River Song was so nice, was so cool when she was introduced.
You know, you think that if they were so against paradoxes that River Song would just, you know, not exist.
Poof. Yeah, you'd think she would disappear in a poof of logic.
Yeah.
No.
Yep, I mean, that was one of the ways I knew that Let's Kill Hitler was just going to suck, apart from the title, was when the Doctor pops out of the TARDIS and they're like, have you found our baby? And he's like, yeah, I kind of gave up. I mean, it doesn't matter, right? We know that she turns into River Song and everything turned out A-okay, even though we really only have River Song's word that she is, in fact, your daughter, and we've established before that we don't really trust River Song because we don't know anything about her, but now we trust her, apparently.
Yeah, I was just saying, the impossible episode wasn't going to trust
River Song. Let's Kill Hitler was a bad episode. It was when she drove up in the car and said, okay, I've got an idea of what we're going to do with our day. Yep. I'm just still in the car.
And I have a gun.
Yeah, and I have a gun, so let's go to 1943.
Also, I kept wondering why a bunch of, like, German soldiers with machine guns didn't burst into the room after they, like, caused a big explosion in the Führer's office. Because, you know, 1939 Germany, like, Berlin was well known for its lack of soldiers. Yeah, it wasn't like they had, like, hundreds of dudes around Hitler because they were constantly worried he was going to get assassinated.
Hitler paranoid?
It's just so weird.
Was up to his old tricks again, just like, whatever. He'll get him one of these days.
Although, to be fair, they did... One of the things they kind of established in Series 6 was that the Doctor went through time practicing his sadistic weirdness on historical figures and causing them to go crazy. Because, like, this was a weird undercurrent that they had in The Impossible Astronaut and Day of the Moon, that the whole reason President Nixon was paranoid and recorded everything and didn't trust anybody was because the Doctor showed up in his office... Told him he can't trust anybody, and then he's fighting aliens, but he can't tell him about it. Also, you have to walk through all these doors into Area 51 and be at my beck and call, President Nixon.
But to be fair, that was the best part of that little series, was Nixon. When I was watching... Oh, and Badger. Badger was also really cool.
Yeah, Badger.
Even though I thought that story was kind of stupid, I really liked Nixon in it. I have to admit.
Oh, no, I liked Nixon, too. It was just like...
Dr. Who.
Thinking about this, you understand why Nixon did Watergate. Because a crazy man showed up in his office in a police box and told him not to trust anybody.
Yep. Well, thanks for that, Doctor.
So maybe Hitler, like, was super paranoid and started murdering people because the Doctor showed up in his office with a time ship that was going to torture him and, like, in front of him talked about how they were going to torture him and blew up things. And he was like, people are trying to kill me.
Yeah.
Time to go crazy.
I don't know. So I guess suffice it to say, even though there are a few episodes in these two series that are actually very good, and you can see a lot of the talent behind them, because there's clearly a lot of talent involved here, I think that their idea for where they're supposed to go with the writing is just, I think they need to turn this shit around. Like, if season 7 isn't going to crash and burn, they need to go with a completely different direction, because I actually appreciate that in season 6, they were trying to come up with a main bad guy that wasn't the Daleks. Because the main bad guy has been the Daleks for like four years, you know, and five if you count season five. So in season six, they were finally like, all right, we're going to have main bad guys. They're not going to be the Daleks. They have nothing to do with the Daleks. And then instead we got the Silence. And it's like, I guess back to Daleks now?
Well, Stephen Moffat actually, I don't know that I believe in him because he says the right thing about the Daleks and then he does all this weird shit with them.
Well,
what he says is that the Daleks are the most reliably defeatable enemies in Doctor Who's arsenal and they need a break. Except then they kept popping up in cameos like in The Wedding of River Song, the Doctor just ambles up and tortures this dying Dalek that someone else has, you know, shot for information.
Yeah, where did he find that Dalek?
He just, you know, he looked it up and he was like, I'm going to torture you for information. Or like, you know, the stone Dalek who got tormented and then shot.
Yep.
And why is like, torture so cool on TV nowadays?
Oh,
why
God.
Is it so cool on Doctor Who? Yeah. Of all programs.
Yep.
I wish Stephen Moffat kind of knew what he was doing, because I don't think he's a terrible writer, but...
No, I mean, I know he's a good writer. I've seen him write well. I just, for some reason, he isn't.
I don't know. Are you sure he's a good writer and he doesn't have a good editor or something? Because I don't know what's going on, but...
Here's my suspicion. My suspicion is that he has a problem, and you see this with a lot of writers. You saw this with Ron Moore in Battlestar Galactica, is that he's a good writer, but when he's put in charge of an entire show... he kind of starts to lose it. That was Ron Moore's problem, because Ron Moore is a great writer, but he couldn't keep all of his stories together in Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
And Stephen Moffat, he's been in charge of Coupling, which doesn't really have a continuing story arc.
Yeah, that's episodic. So
it's just episode after episode after episode, so there's really not a whole lot of continuity you have to worry about. And then he's been in charge of Sherlock, which is three episodes a season. So, you know, he has a lot more time to write that than he does a show like Doctor Who.
I just feel disappointed because, you know, the focus of season six is, you know, River Song. Like, inarguably, the focus is River Song.
Yep.
But we don't spend any time with her, like, her developing a relationship with the Doctor or, like, just an episode about her, even.
Like, yep.
It might be an episode discovering something about her through the Doctor, but it's never an episode just about her.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and I think I've said about all I want to say. Does anyone else have anything they want to add in before we close out this special episode?
I have a parting note.
Yes?
This is for our listeners, specifically. Torture is ineffective and not cool. Just want to put that out there.
Also, genocide is also super not cool.
Nope. Although the Doctor would have you believe otherwise.
It's not okay to genocide anyone, including Silence or Daleks.
Or Time Lords, for that matter.
Or, you know, murder, for that matter, is not cool. You shouldn't be like Amy, actually, at all. But you also definitely shouldn't be like Amy in, like, using someone's eye drive to burn their brain out.
Yeah.
That was, you know, not super vindictive or anything.
All right. So, anyway, thank you both thank you all three of you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed this episode where we ranted about Doctor Who for like an hour and a half, which we are wont to do. And we will see you all next time.
If you don't send hate mail,
send
a bunch of hate mail,
yes,
Doctor Who fans, and we will laugh.
Send
at
us
it.
Hate mail to allthingstrek@hotmail.com.
yes.
That'll be good. Thanks, guys.
Hotmail, a super cool email for professionals.
I forgot to.
Super cool.
Yeah, I forgot to plug the email. Anyway, this is All Things Trek signing off. Thank you.